Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Nazir is daf Nun. Yesterday we made it to the very top of the Yamun on daf Nun. We started yesterday the very combustive discussion that took place amongst the Tanaim. We're gonna resume there in just a moment. First off, thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. And let's just go over some basics before we continue in the Gemara. Yesterday we learned the Mishnah on Testament Vase, and the Mishnah talked about Tumas Ames. A Nazir has to reboot his Naziris when he comes into contact with Tumas Ames. That's the basic point of the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah gets very detailed. The Mishnah tells us exactly what part of human remains that Nazir needs to come into contact with in order for him to be considered a Nazir B'Tumah and to go through the process of Tahara. So just speak now in very more general terms, and that is basically the Mishnah we learned yesterday is really complementary to the Mishnah in Olos. I've been walking around with these series of Mishnahs these past couple of days. The Mishnahs in Olos, again, we don't do this in the Daf Yomi because it's Taharos. You only learn one Masechet in Daf Yomi in Taharos. That's Masechet Anida. But in the meantime, however, the Mishnayos in Olos, the beginning of the second parak. I'm just going to go through the Mishnah very quickly in Olos, and you'll see that it's almost identical to our Mishnah over here that we learned yesterday in Nazir. There's going to be two notable exceptions. I'm going to point them out in just a moment. But the Mishnah in Olos, it's nearly identical. In fact, you can even follow me. I mean, you don't have a Mishnah in Olos in front of you, but you can almost follow me line by line, word for word, the Mishnah that we did yesterday in Nazir and the Mishnah in Olos. Elu metamen ba'ol ames. This is metame ba'ol ames. This we discussed yesterday. When it comes to Tumas Hametz, when it comes to the contraction of Tumah coming off the human remains, so we can talk in contraction, we could talk about communication of the Tumah in one of three ways. Number one, Maga, actually making physical contact with the human remains. Number two, Masa, carrying the human remains even though you don't physically touch it. Or number three, Ol. Ol means that you're under the same roof, or you form a roof over the Tumah. So those are three ways in which we communicate Tumah between the mace and the person. Once the person's Tamei mace, so then he's got to go through the procedure of becoming Tahor, which involves the Paraduma, sprinkling on days 3 and 7 from the Paraduma, Tovling on day 7, experiencing Harav Shemesh, and then the person's going to become Tahor. I know that was just a lot of information in a very short amount of time. Okay. Anyway, so the Mishnah over here describes what exactly is going to give off Tumas Ames. Now, again, I pointed this out yesterday, but let's point it out again. It's just some basic information. When it comes to Tumas Ohel, so it's not all human remains are going to give off Tumas Ohel. Meaning, all we need, as we discussed yesterday, all you need for Tumas Maga and Masa is just a bone chip. You just need a small amount of bone of human remain, and a person is going to become Tamei, either through contact or through carrying. However, when it comes to Ohel, you need a more significant part of the human remains in order for there to be a communication of Tumas Ohel. So what exactly do you need in terms of human remains? So that's the Mishnah in Olos. So again, I'm going to be reading the Mishnah in Olos, and you could almost follow me in the Mishnah in Nazir from yesterday's Daf. Elo, Mitamim Ba'Ohel, the Mishnah in Olos says this is the first Mishnah of the second parak of the Masechta, of Olos. So what gives off Tumas Ohel? Hames. So you have the remains, human remains, meaning, and ostensibly, and this is the first question we're picking up on today, it means the entire human remains, meaning the whole body, kizayis min ames. If you have just a kizayis of flesh, meaning there's nothing other than just simply an olive volume of human flesh, it has to be flesh, not bone. Kizayis netzel. Netzel we're going to be discussing at length today. It's basically decomposed flesh that has become basically gelatinous. It's gelled human remains. Umalot harvad rakav. Melotavid Rakov, also something we're going to be discussing a little bit later this morning, and that's basically dehydrated human remains. It's basically dust. It's decomposed, but to the point where there's no hydration whatsoever. It's just dust, and you need a spoonful of it. Again, we'll talk more about that later. Hashedra v'halgugolas, the skull and the vertebrae and the skull. And in tomorrow's daf, right? It's either going to be tomorrow or Tuesday. You'll forgive me, I don't remember. But whatever. In the upcoming days, we're going to be discussing if we need both the vertebrae and the skull, or it could be either the vertebrae or the skull. That's the discussion that's coming up. Not today. Aver min ames, the Aver Menachai Sheishal Abbasar Karai, if you have a detached limb, and it does not matter whether the detached limb comes off of a dead body or whether it comes off of a live body, as long as there is sufficient flesh on the detached limb, when we say sufficient flesh, so the Mishnah Noelos, neither our Mishnah yesterday gave a description of what it is. Also in the Gemara, we're going to see that as long as it's enough flesh, where had it been attached, it would have regenerated. So then that limb is going to give off Tumas Ohel. Now here we go. I'm reading the Mishnah in Oelos, and if you're looking inside in the Mishnah Nazir, so here's where we're going to have a bit of a distinction. Rova Atzamos, Merova Binyan or Merova Minyan. Rova Atzamos, a quarter of a kav of bones. Okay. If you saw yesterday's Mishnah, or if you remember yesterday's Mishnah, so you'll notice that our Mishnah over here does not say Rova, but rather it says Chatzikav, right? Our Mishnah in Nazir actually has two times more the bone volume than the Mishnah of Noelos mentions. Now, it's not a discrepancy over here. It is a discrepancy. It's not an editor mistake. It's an intended distinction between Tumas Ohel and the Nazir. And the Gemara is going to make note of this, and we're going to point out that there are different thresholds for becoming Tameh and the Nazir having to reboot his Tumah. And why that should be, we're going to be discussing that later on. But again, just right now, just for the very basics. Either the majority of the skeletal height or the majority of the skeletal bones of a human, and even if it doesn't have a rova, it still will be subject to being tame. Okay, there's more to the Mishnah. The Mishnah over here, I'll read the end of the Mishnah. Kamahu rov minyano. How much is considered the majority of skeletal bones of the human body? So I know yesterday we had such a wonderful discussion of counting the vertebrae, right? An offline discussion of counting the vertebrae. So I was looking for the number 18. So the doctors in the room helped me out. Whatever it takes, it may take a little bit of fancy counting in order to get to the number 18. But anyway, from the Mishnah's perspective, there are 248 bones in the human body. I know you're looking, your biologists, your anatomy professors won't tell you that there are 248. And again, it can come back to a point that we discussed yesterday before Shir, and that is that, you know, it's just a question of how to count. And okay, anyway. So the 248, 248 is the number. So what's half of that? 124. We want a majority, so what's a majority? 125. So that's what the Mishnah in Olos tells us. Kamehi rov minyano, me'av esrim v'chamisha. So 125 bones of the human body is considered the majority. Again, it's with the assumption that 248 is the total number of bones in the human body. Okay. That is a Mishnah in Olos. Now the truth of the matter is that yesterday in our Mishnah in Nazir, we also discussed blood, which we didn't get to. That's coming up later in the Mishnayos and Oelos. That's actually the next Mishnah. But for the time being, just understand that really what we're discussing, I don't know what the correct number is, 90% or 95%. But really what we're discussing is that for a Nazir to reboot, when it comes into contact with Tumas Oel of a mace, so basically, if you know your Mishnayos and Oelos, which we just went through, so you're basically familiar with our Mishnah Nazir. As long as a Nazir comes into contact with Tumas Oel and the requisite amount of human remains, quantitatively and qualitatively, so then he's got to start all over again, and that's exactly what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. Okay, and let's start again from the Gemara one more time. We did this yesterday, but let's just start again. Tanur Rabbanan. So I turn back to Memtes Amud Beis, and we start now with a really highly charged discussion. So Acher Patir Sosha Rabbi Meir now passes away. Amalem Rabbi Hula Talmidav. So Rabbi Hula says to his own students, "Al yichnasu Talmidav Rabbi Meir lekan. Don't allow the students of Rabbi Meir to come in here. Mimnisha kan tarnan hein, because they're cantankerous. They're very difficult people. V'lo lumo Torah hein ba. They're not interested in learning Torah. Ela kapchani b'halachos hein. The only thing they're interested in doing is just cutting me down in terms of my positions regarding halachos." So Rabbi Huda takes a very hardline position against what he believes to be a very hardline group of people, and that is just don't allow them here. So I'm sorry, Balachas Hein Bayin. Dachak Sumchas V'Nechna. So one of the, I would say more famous students of Rabbi Meir, I say more famous because, you know, you learn Bab Metziah, so you're familiar with Sumchas, but the, so he comes in, Amar Lahem, Kach Shani Li Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir taught me the following. So what Sumchas now is reviewing with Rabbi Yehuda. Now Rabbi Yehuda did not want to hear any student of Rabbi Meir, so this was really an unsolicited invitation to come in and to learn. Al Elo Tumas HaNazir Megaleach. So he's going over basically our Mishnah. The Mishnah Nazir describing what the Nazir, when the Nazir has to reboot his Nazir is because he becomes Tameh. And what are the first two things mentioned in the Mishnah? Al Ameis V'Alkazayis Men Ameis. So the first two things are A, human remains. B, a kazayit of human remains. So Kaz Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, here's his version of the Mishnah. Now, by the way, it just strikes me as interesting that not only is this the version of the Mishnah as we have it here in Nazir, it's also the same version of the Mishnah that we have in Olos as well. So when Rabbi Yehuda now is objecting, this is my own curiosity, is Rabbi Yehuda also objecting to the version that we have in Olos as well? Meaning, is it that Rabbi Yehuda believes that both versions are incorrect? I think so, but okay, that's just... I'm just pointing it out. Anyway, cause Rabbi Yehuda, when Rabbi Yehuda hears this, he gets so angry. Don't allow the students of Rabbi Meir to come in here. So, and they're just because they're difficult people. They're not interested in learning. All they want to do is just annoy me. And here's what I just cannot tolerate: the idea that if the Mishnah in Nazir is telling us that a kazayis of human remains gives off tuma, and the nazir, when coming into contact with only a kazayis, a mere olive's volume of human flesh remain, is going to now have to reboot his tuma. So if you have the entire body, isn't that obvious? And the Mishnah is not here to teach us obvious. The Mishnah is to teach us chidushim. And so once I have kazayis, so obviously I know that if I have entire human remain, of course it's going to give off tuma. And I can't, that can't possibly be, that can't be the correct nusach in the girsa of the Mishnah. I'm Rav Yossi, so Rav Yossi now involved in this. He's right now observing, but he doesn't want to just simply take a passive role in this whole discussion. I'm Rav Yossi, I'm Rav Meir Shach of Yehuda Kasa, Yossi Shasak Torah Matei Alam. So he's thinking about the ramifications. He's almost taking like stock of the whole scene. He says, Rabbi Meir just passes away, and Rabbi Yehuda is now getting angry. And if I'm quiet, Torah Matahela, so what's going to become of Torah? I'm Rav Yossi, Lo Nitzucha Elamesha, Ain Aleh Kezayis Basar. So now what Rav Yossi is going to do is defend the girsa of the Mishnah according to Rav Meir. Meaning, and it's difficult because Rav Meir is no longer here, and now Rav Yehuda is so upset, and Rav Yossi, so what he's going to try to do is defend Rav Meir, because it's his opinion that Rav Meir's nusach of the Mishnah is in fact correct. Now, we can only corroborate that in hindsight because we look back at the Mishnah and, yeah, that's exactly what we have. And we went over in the beginning of the morning this morning the Mishnah Olos, and that's exactly what we have. So what we basically need to do is answer the question that bothered Rav Yehuda. How can it be that the Mishnah is telling us that a mace and a kazayis? Once I know kazayis, so then obviously a mace is going to give off tumas oha. So how do we respond to that? So first we're going to do is Rav Yossi's answer, and this is where we got to yesterday. So let's go over this again. Second line down on Nun Amar Aleph, Am Rav Yossi Lo Nitzucha Ela Meishe Nela Kezayis Basar. We're talking about a human remains, the entirety of a human body, but there's not a kezayis of basar on it. Meaning, as we described yesterday, basically we're talking about a fetus. Really, a very underdeveloped human body, what we would call a fetus, not in utero. In utero, the fetus, even if it's, God forbid, even if the fetus is no longer alive, but it's not going to give off tuma, it's still enveloped, that's what's called tuma balua. Once the fetus, however, emerges, once there's a miscarriage, it's a stillborn, so then the undeveloped fetus, in fact, is going to give off tuma sohel. And even if the total amount of flesh on the body right now doesn't even total up to a kazayis, that's exactly the chiddush of the Mishnah. The chiddush of the Mishnah is that it's still going to give off tumas ohel. Good. That's Rav Yossi's understanding of the Mishnah. That's how we move from kazayis to... Sorry. That's how we move from mace to kazayis. Mace, a chiddush is, even if it doesn't have a kazayis, i.e. a fetus. Yes?
Doesn't the Mishnah also say that barley size of the bone?
Well, the barley size of the bone in the... I mean, first of all, yes, you're right. But the barley size of a bone is talking about tumas maga. That's contact or masa or carrying. We're talking now about ohel. Okay. So, but I thought you were going to ask another question, which the Gemara jumps on right away. So yomar ve'adain yomar. Right, fourth line down. Al evra mimena megalech al kula lo kol shekein. The Gemara says, I'm still troubled because, look, one of the things mentioned in the Mishnah is the detached limb. The detached limb, either off of a live person or off a corpse, is going to give off tumah. So now, the detached limb, let's think about this. If the detached limb already has a kezias of flesh on it, there's really no discussion to be had. Obviously, that detached limb is going to give off tumah because it has a kezias. What must the Mishnah be referring to when it's talking about the detached limb? It must be talking about where it doesn't have a kezias. And by virtue of the fact that it's a limb, that makes it significant enough where it's going to give off tumas ohel. And so now let's consider. The Mishnah, the Gemara thought that, hey, I know what the chiddush of the first case of the Mishnah is. The chiddush is, it's a very undersized human being, otherwise known as a fetus, and it doesn't have a kezias of flesh on it, and still it's going to give off tumah. Why? Because it's an entire human body. To which the Gemara is saying, wait a second, by the limb, we basically made that point. Even if the limb does not have a kezias of flesh on it, because by virtue of the fact that it's a limb, even if it has a small amount of flesh, it's going to give off tumah ohel. So the point really has been made. So now we're back to square one. So what is the Mishnah teaching us? What new idea is the Mishnah introducing when it's describing the first case of the Mishnah, and that's mace? Ella. So the Gemara now is going to offer a different suggestion. So we're talking about a navel. We're going to go back to the stillborn. But it's so underdeveloped that there's not even sinews that are formed on the body. Meaning it's really now it has to be over 40 days old, because any fetus not 40 days old, the Gemara elsewhere in Masechta Nida describes as Maya Ba'ama, right? That doesn't have the status of a fetus, but as long as it has reached the gestation point of day 40 and onward, so now it has the status of a fetus, it's going to give off tumas ohel, again, not inside, not in utero, but once expelled from the body, it's going to give off tumas ohel, and even though lo niskashu begidin, even though sinews have informed, it's really an underdeveloped fetus, still it's going to give off tumas ohel. So that's what our Mishnah could be describing, and now we'll say a chiddush. Meaning, as it relates to a limb is a limb off of a fully formed human being. So that limb has sinew; it's formed. Meaning, it's what we would call a body part. However, if we're talking about such an underdeveloped fetus, the havamina would have been. Look, that's not human remains. Meaning, again, it's. We're being so clinical about this. Obviously, it's a tragedy, but it's not human remains. Not going to give off tumas ohel. It's not significant enough to be give off tumas ohel. That's the chiddush in the Mishnah. If you have a fetus, even though it's super underdeveloped to the point where it doesn't even have sinews and ligaments, and it's not yet connected, still it is going to give off tumas ohel. That is one suggestion of the Gemara. And Rava Amar lo nitzucha ela l'rov binyano v'l'rov binyano shein behem rov atzamos. And another suggestion of the Gemara is that maybe, even though it is rov binyano, meaning it is the majority of the skeletal structure. Now, when I say majority, it can mean one of two things. Either the bones that we have represent the majority of the height of the human being, that's rov binyano, or rov minyano, or the total number of bones that we have represent the majority of the human body. Like we learned together in the Mishnah Olos at the beginning of this year today, total number of bones is 248, majority is 125. Maybe that's what the Mishnah is talking about in introducing She'ein Bem Rovat Samos, even though it does not have Rovat Samos, it's still going to give off Tumah, and maybe that's what the Mishnah is referring to when it describes the first case of mace. Okay, period. Okay, so a very heated discussion in the Beis Medrash, but basically, when all said and done, it comes down to why would the Mishnah have to say mace followed by kezais min a mace? If kezais gives off tumah, certainly a mace would as well. And the Gemara suggested a couple of explanations of what the Mishnah is trying to tell us by saying the word mace.
Next. Al kazayis meis v'al kazayis netzel. Either you have a kazayis of human remains, again, flesh, we're talking about muscle, or kazayis netzel. Or you have something which is so decomposed it's basically gel. It's like a gelatin, if you will. So v'ezu netzel basna meshikarish umol shehirtiach. So the Gemara says, well, what's happening over here is that you have the flesh which is congealed and mol shehirtiach, or it's the it's a liquid that that basically gelled up. So hechidami. The Gemara says now again, let's consider now. We're looking at something which is gelatinous, and to be perfectly honest, we don't know what it is. So, generally speaking, if we don't know what it is, so why are we jumping to assumptions? That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara says, if we didn't know it come from a human being, and we didn't know it was human remains, and all we see is a gelatinous item on the floor, on the ground, so why are we going to jump to conclusions and assume, hey, that's coming from human remains? So the Mayhavi, Ela diyedina didideihu. So the Gemara says it must go like this. It must be that the context of the Mishnah is that we know that the gelatinous subject that item that we're looking at actually is a discharge off of the human body. That little we know. Afa gavdlo karish. So the Gemara says, well, even if it doesn't congeal, I'm Rav Yirmiyah bistam. So Rav Yirmiyah says, well, it is stam. And I'll explain what that means in just a moment. We're going to see Tosfos in just a moment. So the Gemara says we're talking about where it's stam, where it's general. Ikarish malahu, lo karish, dilma kicha v'neohu. So the Gemara says, if it congeals, and it becomes now a congealed gelatinous item, so then that's moel. So that is basically a gelatinous form of the human flesh, therefore subject to tumah, assuming you have a kazayis of it. A low karash, however, if it doesn't congeal, dilma kecho vineo. So then, you know what this liquid is? It is not the decomposed flesh, but rather it's saliva or some sort of liquid discharge that comes out of the body. That does not give off tumas ohel. And if we're not talking about flesh, if we're talking about just saliva or some sort of mucus that comes out of the body, that does not give off tumas ohel, and therefore won't be subject to tumas emes. Let's take a look at Tosfos together. Tosfos, fourth wide line down, mid-range lines. Am Rav Yirmiyah b'stam, klamar. Diadeinan deba mizeh hames. We know that this liquid is coming off of the human body. Avalo yedina mohel zeh mibesaro o mikecho. But here's what we don't know. We don't know whether the liquid that's coming out of the body is either going to be a liquefied form of the flesh, or is it saliva or mucus? Kiresh vaday mo'el hu, if it congeals, meaning the congealing itself is going to be a test positive that what this liquid is actually flesh. If it goes back to being congealed, so it's mo'el, so it's considered then human remains. So habami basra ames v'ilon nikrash, and if it doesn't congeal, kecho veneo hu. So then it's either just saliva or mucus, and therefore it does not give off tumas ames. V'achinami yesh lafarish gabi yirtiach d'lo yadinan v'chiyirtiach v'ala resichos v'ademol habami hamesu v'zeo netzel lo yirtiach kecho veneo hu. And Tosfos points out that another test that can be done is if you cook it up, if you boil it up. Another test, and that is if you cook it up, says Tosfos. And again, you know it came from a mace. You just simply don't know whether it's saliva or whether it's human flesh. So if you boil up and it bubbles, so that's considered now human flesh. And therefore it's subject to tumah. And if it doesn't boil up, so then it's just either mucus or saliva, and therefore it's not considered decomposed flesh, and therefore it doesn't give off tumas mace. Okay, I do not know if in today's remains if the body reacts the same way the Gemara /Tosfos is describing over here, but that's the Gemara's understanding of what netzel is. Okay, so basically now what are we saying in the Mishnah, just to keep it a little more simple and streamlined? Basically, if I have human flesh that has basically liquefied, so it still has the status of human flesh. If I have a gezeis of it, so then it's going to give off tumas ohal. And the only thing really we were discussing is, with what kind of veracity do you know that it's actually human flesh and not either a mucus or a saliva emanating from the body? Back to the Gemara, more than halfway down in the Amud, the following question was posed from Abai to his Rebbe Rabba. Yesh netzel abehema o ein netzel abehema. This idea, this concept, that if I have liquefied human flesh, the netzel, which ends up congealing and looks a little gelatinous, so we said that when it comes to the human being, it has the status of kezais menames, and therefore is going to give off tumas ohel. Is this idea specific to human remains, or is it also true by, let's say, for example, animal remains as well? Okay, let's go over again some basic information before we step forward into this Gemara. We know that not only do human remains give off tumah, but remains of an animal also give off tumah as well. That's what we call a nevela. You have an animal that has not experienced a shechita, proper shechita, so that animal now is a carcass, it's considered nevela, and it's going to give off tumas nevela. It's an avatum, it's a source of tumah. The most striking difference between the nevela of an animal and the remains of a human body is, of course, tumas ohel. A body of a human being is going to give off tumas ohel. Nevela of an animal does not give off tumas ohel. That is the most striking difference between them. And when it comes to the nevela of an animal, only the flesh of the animal gives off tumas nevela. The bones do not. It's only specific to the meat of the animal, the flesh of the animal. Is there a concept of netzel as it relates to animals as well? Meaning, if you don't have flesh in its original form, but it liquefied and it decomposed to the point now where it's some sort of gelatinous form of the flesh, is it going to give off tuma, much like the same thing is true by a human being? So mi amrina gemir netzel da'asim adam aval da'asim behem alo odim aloshna. And the question the Gemara formulates is very simple. Is this concept a more universal concept that applies to both animal and humans, or is it only specific to humans? Good. Hanich laman da'amar tuma chamura. So the Gemara says, well, first of all, let's consider the following. Okay. When it comes to the tuma of a human being, so obviously the tuma of a human being is that if you have human remains, it gives off tuma. And decomposition of human remains is not going to affect it whatsoever. However, when it comes to the remains of an animal, nevela, so an animal is only going to give off tuma as long as the meat of the animal is edible. Okay. And here now in the Gemara, what we're going to learn together is that what we're going to do is give a definition of edibility. Because edible can mean the following. Edible can mean edible, you and I would eat it. Again, obviously we wouldn't eat it because it's not kosher. But in terms of the definition of tuma tahara, kashrus is not a prerequisite. It just simply is, would somebody eat it? Jew or non-Jew? Jew would not eat it because it's not kosher, but a non-Jew would eat it. So, hanich laman da'amar tuma chamura ad leger, v'tuma kala ad lekelev. So now the Gemara says, look, we know that there is basically two opinions on this front. First of all, let's just get familiar with the terms. Tuma chamura. Tuma chamura means ava tuma, the meat of a nevela being a source of tuma, right? What we call nevela. So when it comes to tuma chamura being an ava tuma ad leger, as long as it's consumable by a human being, right? The Gemara here describes a ger because, again, a Jew would need it, it's not kosher. But a ger over here does not mean a ger tzedek, doesn't mean a full convert. It means, you know, a resident alien in Israel who is allowed to eat treif, is allowed to eat nevela. So as long as he can eat it, the meat of this animal is going to give off tuma chamura. Once he can no longer eat it, even if you would feed it to your dog, it's not going to give off tuma chamura. Tuma kala, now by tuma kala, what do we mean by that? We mean the meat is no longer a source of tuma because it's no longer edible by humans, but it's still going to be treated as tumas ochlin. A food is susceptible to tuma, and because the food is susceptible to tuma, So if I have a source coming into contact with a food, it's going to absorb the tumah. It's going to become tame. This is what's called tumah kala. So in terms of the meat of the animal losing the status of meat in terms of a food in tumas ochlin, ad lekelef, that's going to be where it can no longer be eaten by a dog. Now, what did we just learn together? One, according to the first opinion, when nevela can no longer be eaten by humans, it's no longer an avatuma. It's no longer a source of tuma. When it becomes so disgusting, so revolting, can't even be eaten by a dog, even a dog would pass it by, so then it's no longer going to accept tuma. It's not going to be tuma sochlin. Good. According to this first opinion now, think about what we're discussing, the question that we just raised. When nevela becomes decomposed and putrefied to the point where it's gelatinous, are we going to then say that it's going to give off tumas nevela? Well, think about it. Once it's gelatinous, it's not, no one of us, again, not us, meaning no human would eat it. So the question doesn't even get off the ground. Of course it's not going to give off tumas nevela because none of us would eat it. So the Gemara says, fine, shapir. Shapir meaning we don't even have a question to ask. But Elaman Damar Tumah Chamor Alekala Michael Amema. However, there's another opinion, which is that a nevela is going to give off tumah, but only at the point where it's until it's not edible by dogs. Meaning, even though we're going to skip it, and we, meaning the human race, would never eat it, but if a dog would eat it, it's still considered nevela, both as a source of tumah and obviously as a receptacle of tumah as well. So, according to this opinion now we have a question we can ask, which is, netzel, if I have the gelatinous decomposed flesh of an animal, is it going to give off tumah, tumas nevela? Now, Michael Amemar Tashma, the Gemara says, well, let's see. Himchal ba'or tameh, b'chama tahor. This is a Mishnah, it's actually Tosefta, and the Tosefta over here is describing the following. We have the fat, the chelev, of a of tahor, of a kosher bird. Kosher bird that did not experience a shechita. So this is what's called nivlas of tahor, the flesh of a nevela of a bird. We know the halacha is that if a person were to eat a kezais of nivlas of tahor, so then he or she is going to become tamei. In other words, this is a very unique halacha in the world of tumah, where transmission of the tumah only comes about when you put it in your mouth to eat. Now, it's an irony, if you will, because... Right, in other words, yeah, and your clothing becomes tumah as well. It's an irony because no Jew should be eating it, in other words, because it's not kosher, but if you do so, you're going to be subject to... You're going to become tumah. So, the Mishnah says that if it was cooked in fire, meaning it was simply, it was a fatty part of the bird that didn't receive a shechita, and you cooked it in fire, and you liquefied it, and you ate it, so now you're going to become tamei, because it's edible. But bechama, but if it got cooked in the sun, tahor. So the person who eats it is going to be tahor, because if it was cooked in the sun, it's disgusting, meaning no person would eat it. And the person who does eat it is not going to become tamei, because you only become tamei when you ingest something which is edible. Something which is cooked in the sun is simply inedible. So the Gemara says, now, if your threshold of when it loses its tumah is only when it's no longer eaten by a dog, so the Gemara says, so I don't understand. Even if it was cooked in the sun, you and I and any normal human being would pass up on it. But the dog, you know, it's a spoiled, sun-baked remains of a bird. So the dog would come. I know this is revolting, but, you know, that's obviously why we're talking about dogs. The dog would come and the dog would nibble at it. So the Gemara says, so Isak adach lekelva filu bechama, nami. So the Gemara says, emas mamachile, baser di isruch bechama. So, and Kevin de Asra Chavale Afar. So the Gemara says, well, the Gemara says, no. The sun only bakes it and basically melts it down only after it becomes putrefied and disgusting. And since now what the sun is basically melting now is something which is so putrefied, so decomposed, so disgusting, that it wouldn't even be eaten by a dog. The Gemara describes it as just simply offer. Okay, so again, the question that was asked is natzel something that is a concept that applies to human remains? Does it apply to animal remains as well? And the Gemara entertains the question, gives two different thresholds for when an animal is still going to be a tumas nevela, and the Gemara basically leaves this question unresolved. Okay, Tanan. We're learning together now a Mishnah in Machshir. And the Mishnah Machshir describes now liquids being poured from one container into another container. Kolanitzak tahor. Anything that is being poured is going to be tahor. What are we describing over here? If you take a look at the second to last Tosas on the Amud, so he goes on to write, Beper Chamish de Machshirin. So Tosas tells us, first of all, an address where we could turn to find this Mishnayos. Go to the fifth parak of Machshirin. Machshirin, another Masechta. I should have brought Machshirin as well. Okay, another Masechta found in Seder Taharos. The general idea behind Machshirin is that in order for a food to become susceptible to Tumah, it first must make contact with one of the seven liquids. Dam shachat. I'm sorry. Ya dam shachat. Okay, the seven liquids. Where once the food comes into contact with it, beratzon, and you wanted that contact to be done to have happened. So then the food has to have been detached from the ground. If the food is attached to the ground, it's grounded, and it's not going to be subject to tumah. It won't be mukhtar lekabel tumah. Okay, I just the very basic halachas of machshirin. I'm saying parenthetically. Anyway. So the fifth parak of Machshirin describes the following: Kol anitzok tar sheim yatzak v'irei mashkin taharin lesoch mashkin tameim. Let's say you're pouring from liquids which are tahor onto liquids which are tamei. Milamala lamata lo nitmu'u ataharim denitzok eino chibor. So if you will now, basically the issue which the Mishnah is describing is the following. I'm pouring from a container that's tahor. The liquid that I'm pouring from, the source of the liquid is tahor, but it's being poured onto tumah. And now, let's assume that it's not eno nifsak hekiluach. The pour itself is not broken. So now it's connected from the top to the bottom through the flow. So is that considered a connection? So that now all the liquid that's still up in the top is going to become tummy, or are they considered unconnected? And the Mishnah says very clearly, "Ein achibur." It's not considered a connection. Lo tumah v'lo tahara, for neither tumah tahara. So that flow is not going to connect the top and the bottom as it's being poured. Good. So kol anitzuk tahar chutz mitvash hazipin v'akzei apichis, but with two notable exceptions, and that's basically very viscous liquid. Okay, a honey basically. So honey and something also that is another something else that's very liquid. Very thick. So that is going to be a connection. Yeah, something along those lines. To be honest, I'm not even sure what the
because the seventh liquid is the honey,
right? Yeah, correct. Understood. But we're just talking about now the liquids themselves, the bottom being tummy, the top being tahor, and the flow either serving as a connection or not. The Mishnah says it does not serve as a connection, with exception to basically very thick liquid. Now, Beishama in that very same Mishnah says that even if I pour like a porridge, and obviously we're talking now about a very thick food, like oatmeal, if you will, hot cereal. So it's that which on top is going to become tamei, because so let us la achareha. What Beis Shammai is basically describing is that it's not that the flow is creating a connection. It's just that when it's being poured, so there's going to be a kickback, if you will, some rebound. And some of that liquid which is rebound is now going to be tamei liquid, which is going to rebound back and be metame that which I'm pouring from. Okay, that's the Mishnah Machshirin. Bain Rami Bar Chami Yesh Nitzok LaOchlin O Ein Nitzok LaOchlin. Now, we are off tangent right now, meaning Understand, and I think today we're just going to end. We're going to end with this point over here. We are very off tangent because remember, all we were discussing the Mishnah Nazir, which is really complementary to the Mishnah Olos in terms of what part of the human remains is going to be is going to give off Tumas Ohal, where the Nazir, if he comes into contact with it, is going to have to reboot his Nazirus. And we got through the case of Mace and Kizais Men Mace, and we got through Netzel, and then the Gemara just got off on a little bit of a tangent. As long as we're discussing Netzel, as long as we're discussing the gelatinous liquid of human remains, so the Gemara then says, hey, I wonder if it applies also to Nevel of an animal. Gemara deliberated that for a couple minutes, and then the Gemara says, hey, you know what, as long as we're talking about thick liquids, so I'm wondering now, says the Gemara, when I'm pouring thick liquid from one container to another, and the top container is Tahor and the bottom container is Tameh, is there going to be a connection, yes or no? Okay? And the Mishnah Machshirin discusses this very topic. The Mishnah Machshirin really is discussing thick liquid, and now the Gemara, again, we're so far off on a tangent, now the Gemara says, hey, I know we were discussing thick liquid, I wonder now, basically, would the same thing be true by a pourable food? By Rami Bar Chama, Yesh Nitzuk La'ochlin O Ein Nitzuk La'ochlin. Is there going to be the similar concept as it relates to food? For example, says Tosfos, let's say you had a fat, right, a hard fat, and what you did is you melted it down, and you poured that hard fat. So, by a liquids, we generally say that a thin liquid, one that does not have a thick viscosity, so that does not create a chibur. We said in the Mishnah, something that has a thick viscosity is going to be connected. And so now the Gemara just wants to extend the point to, what if it's a food that was melted down and is now pouring like a liquid? So if it behaves like a liquid, do we also attach the same halachas that we know from the Mishnah Machshirin? Okay, we are way off topic. But the Gemara asked the question, so the Gemara says, now, as far as the thick liquids are concerned that were described in the Mishnah, why is it that these thick liquids create a connection between where I'm pouring from, the source from where I'm pouring from, to that which I'm pouring to? Is it because of the kickback? Because of the rebound? Or maybe it's not because of the rebound, but rather because of the thick viscosity. Meaning maybe the thick viscosity of the liquid is really what's creating connection. So the Gemara says, and over here, when we're talking about a fat that was melted, even though it was melted, it's still going to be a very viscous liquid. And so therefore, even though there's no kickback, but there may be a connection because of its thick viscosity. Amarava Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, I think I can answer from the following. Chelav HaMeis, Shushalem V'hiticho Tameh. So if I have a fat of human remains, Shushalem, as long as it is intact and it was melted down, it's still going to be a source of tumah. Hayum mefurad v'hiticho, but if it was segmented, if it was fragmented, and then someone cooked it, so now it's combined, it's going to be tahor. So now the Gemara says, now if there's no connection as it relates to food, shalem v'hiticho namili tahor. So the Gemara says, if it was shalem, if it was intact, and then it was melted down, so shouldn't it be tahor? Because once it's been moved from a solid state to a liquid state, so it's no longer mechubar, it's no longer considered connected. And again, the only reason why it's going to give off tumas because you have a kezais of it. And now that it's melted down, you don't have a kezais of it. I'm Rabbi Zera, Ano Mar Bered Ravina, Targumei Hacha B'Maiskinan. So the which the Gemara says, yeah, you know what? Over here, the way we understood it is going to Bahad de Demir Tachle, Salak Amuda Denur Lepome Demana, Vikarish, the Isa Kuliga Behadade. So basically, as Tosas understands the Gemara answer over here, even when you melted it down, you still have a kezias of the fat in one area, and so therefore that's why it's going to be tameh, because you still have a kezias of it intact. Amalei Ravina Ravashi Tashma Bisham Hermin Mafa Makbashal Grisa Vishal Pum Nishain Solad and Lacharam. So the Gemara says, okay, again, let's try to resolve the issue looking at the opinion of Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says that if I'm pouring a hot cereal, so that which I'm pouring from is going to become tummy because of the kickback. So the Gemara says, Midiri, also Misham Dismich and Hacham Misham Rire. So the Gemara says, okay, but I'm really not sure if you can really compare. Because over there, it's samuch, it's very thick, the porridge, and that's why there's going to be kickback. Over here, maybe not. Maybe there wouldn't be a kickback if I took a fat and I melted it down. So once again, the Gemara, going a little bit off topic, is now trying to figure out whether or not when I pour from one to another, when it comes to liquefied food, is that going to be considered a chibur as well? Is that going to be considered a connection? Okay, let's just stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with the rekev, the dust. And so, just as a quick review, we went through the Mishnah in Nazir. Actually, we went through it yesterday, but I went today over the Mishnah in Oalos, and basically it's the same with one notable difference, which we'll explore tomorrow in tomorrow's daf. A discussion of why the Mishnah says mace and kazayis mena mace. Couple suggestions in the Gemara, what chiddush is in the Mishnah when the Mishnah says mace. We talked about the gelatinous remains of humans. Question of whether or not it is actually the flesh decomposed or whether it's mucus or saliva. That really makes all the difference. Mucus and saliva is not considered, does not give off tumas mace. Gelatinous human remains does. The Gemara gives us a test in terms of determining whether it is human remains or it's just simply, it's flesh or it's just saliva and mucus. And then the Gemara goes off on a tangent discussing chiburim, discussing connections between whether a flow of pour creates connection between that which is below and that which is above. I'll be right out.
Is that okay?
We'll leave it. No problem at all. So the question of whether or not the flow is considered a connection, the Gemara deliberates that as well, and also leaves that question unresolved. I'll stop over here, and tomorrow we continue with the next segment of the Mishnah.